Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, and welcome to Jazz Talk, a Jazz on the Tube podcast. My name is Ken McCarthy, and this is where we talk with people who are doing important work that supports and illuminates the music we love. The writers, the scholars, the educators, the filmmakers, the producers, and more. And today we're going to be talking with somebody I've been wanting to interview for a long time. And this particular program is inspired by a remark made by Duke Ellington, where he said, "I don't want to be called a jazz musician." And I remember when I first heard that, young jazz fan, I thought, why doesn't he want to be called a jazz musician? And then as I became more mature, I realized jazz is a form, and it's a great form, but musicians want to do what musicians want to do, whatever that may be. And so I think what Duke Ellington was responding to was the idea that all he could be was a jazz musician and play in the jazz slot, which is a great slot to be in. But he saw himself, and in fact was, a musician, which meant you can go in any sonic direction you want. So what I want to do every year from now on, starting on the solstice, which is when we're recording this, and we'll do it next year on the solstice with another artist, is someone who's known as a jazz musician and who has definite jazz chops, who has done something that is musical and not jazz. And we're going to talk about it. And I'm sort of inspired by these director's versions of DVDs, if you've ever seen them, where, you know, the movie's playing and the director is talking about, you know, why I did this shot, why I did that shot. So I'm going to see how much behind the scenes we can extract from Aurora on that. All right, so now we're going to get to the main event, which is this somewhat mysterious album to me. I mean, I've listened to it a lot, so the music's not totally mysterious, but its origins and its meaning and who's the monocle and what's Kind Humankind and all that kind of thing. So this is an album that came out in 2016?
Sure.
Something like that.
I think it actually has never been released still, but has sort of been on a very slow leak for years and years and years. And yeah, 2016 sounds right.
That was that's when the leak started.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's Let's hope the leak will eventually turn into a torrent, because I love this album, and I was telling Aurora earlier in another conversation that I cannot listen to this album and drive a car and operate a vehicle, because I will go, I'm not even exaggerating, I just get too interested in what's going on, and so I only listen to it when I'm home behind closed doors and in a safe space.
A driving hazard on it, huh?
Yeah, it's really weird. You know, they do say, like, do not operate machinery, you know, on certain medications.
Right.
So this album actually is, and I don't know another album that does that to me. I'm not sure why it does it to me, but let's talk about some of the surface stuff on this. So number one, you play all the instruments.
Yes. Yeah. It's a solo album in the true sense of the word, in that it's music written by me and that's played by many, many overdubbed versions of myself.
So not to strain your memory, I'm going to read the album of what all the instruments you play: accordion, drums, guitar, piano, organ, saxophones, plural. And I know you play alto and soprano. Did you play any other saxophones on this one? Do you remember?
I don't think so.
And then
there's not
flute.
Yeah.
And then flute, trumpet, and percussion. No violin.
No violin. No. No one needs to hear me play the violin. Although I enjoy it, but no one else needs to suffer through that.
So for people that, like me included, can't imagine how one does this, mechanically, what do you do? Like lay down like one track and then you go back and play over that one and then go back and play over the other, the next one, you know, and just keep stacking it up?
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing a solo, you know, there's great advantages to teaching people music and composing your music and teaching it to people that you want to play it, or oftentimes even better, giving parts to people and then they improve upon it, or they play idiomatically very differently than you could play yourself on it. And with this album, I was really sort of interested in my own limitations and interested in just sort of trying to explore what I would sound like if I took everything that was out of my head and put it into my hands and played it. And so, yeah, it's a quite a tedious process a little bit, and each song is a little bit different. But, yeah, you just lay down track of whatever the bass instrument is at the time. For a lot of this album, it's accordion. And then you go back and start overdubbing and overdubbing and layering and layering. And it's a lot like painting, I think of it. You know, it's orchestrating. The recording process is so wonderful in that you can really kind of paint and immediately hear back.
Mm-hmm.
If I could actually be paid to do anything, I would just get, if I could get paid to just record all day and be in the studio recording, I would jump at that opportunity at a hat. That would be so wonderful, because I really enjoy myself in the studio working with a great engineer.
Wow. Okay. And even working solo the way you made this album, even working that way.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with a really fabulous engineer, my friend Don Godwin, who I've known for a long time. You know, so a lot of it I had pre-planned, but then there were parts of it in the studio where I'd be like, "Oh, Don, I want to try one more harmony part, a little different," you know. And I'd be like, "Okay, let's do one more vocal track." And then I would look over and I'd be like, "Don, I think I want to try a backbeat with these metal stairs that I see in the corner over here. Can you mic these stairs?" You know? And then sometimes Don would throw ideas of like, "Why don't we reamp the accordion, and we're going to put the amp in another room. We're going to like distort it greatly, and then I'll mic that amp and then I'll bring it back into the recording." So, you know, there's an amazing thing that happens when you work with a fabulous engineer who really is excited about sound. Is as excited about sound as you are.
Well, that kind of speaks to the theme of this program that I hope to do every year, which is it's sound. It's about sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a sound art, which means any sounds you can conceive, not limited to whatever is in the classic toolkit. You know, whatever, you know, if you want to bang on a metal stairway, that may create the sound you want for the effect that you want to create.
Right.
Yes, it's interesting. So people that don't know, I would say you're a pretty social person, and certainly when you're fronting your band, it's a really great social event for people that go out and hear the band. So it's surprising that, you know, if you were to rank musical operations, that working in the studio is the most interesting to you. But I can see why, based on what you're saying, because it's like a painter in the studio. It's
yeah,
perfect.
I love it.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of, you were talking about laying down the bass, and that very often the bass for your performances on this album is the accordion. You clearly love the accordion. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings for the accordion?
feelings.
Well, you know what I mean. You definitely love this instrument. There's no two ways around it, right?
Yeah, it's a beautiful. I mean, I think any accordion player might be able to test that your feelings for the accordion are quite complicated, because it itself is a very temperamental instrument, especially in this day and age when you know you can really dial in so much with like MIDI and with direct input. And but the accordion is also you know a really beautiful instrument. It's essentially like a little organ in a box, or it's a little orchestra in a box. And the reason that so much of that initial album is accordion based is because I used to play the songs live, where I'd play accordion sometimes through effects pedals, but sometimes just the accordion, and then I would do these kind of foot drum things with it. And that was the original monocle, was just a really stripped down kind of bare bones version of a lot of these songs.
Got it.
I'm not an extremely fine accordion player. I always tell people I rarely would get hired, for instance, to play an idiomatic musical gig on the accordion. like a Balkan gig or a Klezmer gig or a Zydeco gig, you know, I will get hired to play the music of Aurora Neeland, and I will be the person hiring myself. Or I often play the accordion in a lot of like open improvisation or free improvisation contexts. But I love the accordion just that it's, you know, it's an instrument that breathes, which is, it's a chordal instrument that breathes, which is kind of two loves of mine, and that it's, mm-hmm. it's a harmonic instrument, and it also is an instrument with breath. And
I guess from
something
a practical
about it
point,
that's very, very attractive to me.
Yeah, I guess also from a practical point of view is you can rest your chops, right? You don't have to be,
yeah.
you don't have to,
well,
you don't have to create the air for that air sound.
Yeah.
You get a mechanical help from the box.
That's true. I mean, also you can't sing when there's a horn in your mouth. So I think that is one of the largest.
I never thought of that. See, I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about music. Okay, so, and I also want to tell people, at some point in time, Aurora did some covers of Tom Waits on, I think you were on accordion, and wow. I hope,
yeah.
I don't know if he's ever had the chance to hear your work. On.
Oh, I doubt it. No, he has millions of people doing covers of his songs. You know.
I know, but you can hold your ears, because I don't want to embarrass you. Aurora's are, like, amazing. Amazing. I think if he heard them, it would have an impact on him because you really bring stuff
thank
out.
You.
Yeah, no, you really do. You really do.
Yeah, the lyrics to a lot of his songs are very beautiful, you know, and he actually, from my understanding, his partner, Kathleen Brennan, also writes a lot of the lyrics to many of those songs, those later songs that we know and love. And so I think a lot of Tom Waits' lyrics and just emotiveness that he has is they're great. They're still great. Even, you know, I haven't listened to him in quite a long time. I think many of us have, like, you go through phases where you really listen to something. And I know for me, Tom Waits, I listened to when I was 13, between like 13 and 20.
Uh-huh.
And I love those soundscapes of those later albums and the lyrical content. And it still holds true, you know, decades later.
Get me back home on the day after. Who turns the wheel? Who rolls the dice on the day after fighting for freedom. I am fighting for my life and another day in the world. I just do what I'm told. We're just the gravel on the road, and only the lucky ones come home on the day after tomorrow. Summer, it too will fade, and with it brings a winter's frost, dear. And I know we two are made of all the things that we have lost here. I'll be 21 today. I've been saving all my pay, and my plane will touch down on the day after
tomorrow. That leads us to this, which is one of the things that Waits has, is in addition to a musical presence, there's a theatrical presence. And that's one of the things for me going on with, is the name of the album, this is how ignorant I am, is the name of the album Kind Humankind?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the name of the album. And then the monocle is the name of the artist?
Yeah, monocle's the name of the project or the artist, yeah.
Got it. So Kind Humankind, to me, is extremely theatrical. It kind of lights up the same, this is a weird neurological analogy, but it kind of lights up the same neurons that get lit up when I listen to opera. At least for me. Oh my God, it's the best.
You know,
before movies, before television, before record players, we had opera, you know, and we still haven't surpassed it, in my opinion. But you know, it's quite amazing. You know, it's kind of amazing thing. So this to me has that thing that's, it's musical, obviously, but it's also operating on these other dimensions.
Hmm.
It's, to me, I don't hear this as, oh well, I have this song, and hey, this is a pretty good song, and gee, I'll put this one here. I mean, maybe that's how this was put together, but for some reason, I hear kind of stories in every single song, and there is some kind of unity. I can't necessarily articulate what it is because I don't think it's spelled out, but I feel it's more like, I don't know, there's an album that Lou Reed did, I don't know if you ever heard it, called Berlin. Did you ever hear that album?
I can't say.
It's kind of obscure, and I don't think any of the songs were ever hits, but every one of the songs was related to every other one of the other songs. I guess that's the thing that you know what I mean? It wasn't, hey, I've got 12 good ones. It was like, every one of these songs has a connection to every one of the other songs on the, you know?
Right, yeah.
So am I hearing that correctly, or am I experiencing a sonic delusion?
Oh, I mean, with the monocle, I really like to think of it as, it's kind of like my little birdcage project, as in there's like a little bird that lives inside your heart, and once in a while you like open it up and you let it out and you let it say some things, and then it gets scared of the world and so it goes back in. And I would say that all of those songs are coming from that same place.
Gotcha.
in my experience, you know, no one project can be your everything project. And so for me specifically, I like to have a few different musical projects because I'm really just trying to serve the music of that particular creature that is saying something in that project, you know. So I would say that there is certainly a continuity of sort of the lens of the monocle is, you know, has a continuity, which I think runs through a lot of those songs. It has a more kind of vulnerable and sensitive lens of the world, and that kind of shapes the space of the song, the space that those songs live.
Gotcha. That's what that must be what I'm feeling when I'm hearing it. The monocle. What are we talking about when we're talking about a monocle? I know in the dictionary it's a like a lens that you put on one eye to see better. Is there any meaning beyond that?
I think for me it's kind of as I was saying when I first started the project, it was just my little solo project. You know, I was doing a lot of things and the sideman in different bands or as a frontman, and I really was wanting just a project that was just about, like, for better or for worse, we really can only see the world as we see it through our little personal lenses. And, of course, we have many tools to step outside and try to understand other perspectives. And, you know, there's a lot that can, you can experience other things, but I think ultimately that there is a piece of it that's like you're able to experience the world as you. And so the monocle kind of came from this thinking of like, oh, you got this one lens, or even like you're filtering the music through this one lens for this particular project. So it kind of came from that. And it was a solo project in the beginning.
Gotcha. I guess mono, in the word mono is the word one too, so.
Yeah.
So it starts with kind of almost like a gong sound, the origins, and that sound kind of, I hear it again throughout different pieces. It reminds me of a sound I heard when I was a kid. I had this job where I had to fill a humidifier with water. And so I had to fill a tea kettle and walk across the room and, you know, pour it into this humidifier. And when I would hit the tea kettle against something, it would create a certain sound that I loved, right? And for some reason, the gong, I don't know, is it a gong? It's a bell? What is it?
It's an actual bell.
Oh, wow.
So quite large.
Quite
bell.
Big.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. One of the things about the album for people, when you hear it, when you get it, which I recommend everybody do, the melodies are so, so wonderful. And it's kind of hard to objectify that or you know, say anything more than that, but the melodies are very strong. Let's start with the first tune on it, first composition. And I heard pieces of this album, I guess on YouTube, I must have pieces, you know, here and there. And I always liked it. I always thought the melodies were strong. But it wasn't till later that I just sat down and started really listening to it and just listening to it through and through and through. But the first piece definitely I heard was Shall Not Want. It almost has a, I love that line, I shall not want this feeling to disappear. Yeah, I don't know. By the way, the other thing I want to say for people, I discovered that Aurora is quite a poet, which you'll find out if you can get your hands on the lyrics. And I'm in the process of encouraging her to someday make a PDF.
Ken's lobbying.
I'm lobbying on behalf of
a fan.
Because I have to say, I always liked the music, but once I got the lyrics and was able to, the libretto, really, to me, once I had the libretto and was able to follow the lyrics, really read them, it's like, oh, okay, all right, this is really even more than I already thought. So there's a great line in here. I will not fight, though madmen taught my heart to be a fist. I don't know, I'm kind of fishing here. What's this song about? Just like, this is a lame question.
Well,
but
there's
really
always two answers when anyone asks you what a song is about, and the truthful answer is it's about whatever you hear it being about. That's the best answer. I know for me personally, it's coming from a very particular story and a very particular, like I fell in love, or actually we both of us fell in love. A man and I fell in love over one night at a festival, and he was engaged to be married, like 10 months later. And we never had any physical relationship, but we had like a musical exchange for many months. And before he was about to get married, he asked me if he should break off his marriage. And I said no. And so the song is sort of about wanting to hold on to those feelings of just joyously being able to see someone at their best and appreciating them for who they are, and wanting to like hold on to those feelings while also not letting them get warped by the realities of time, of meeting someone at the wrong time or not at the right time, or just appreciating that time for what it was that you got to share with them and those feelings you got to share with them. That's what it's about for me, but I, you know, it's certainly meant to be, there's a lot of other stories in it. I would, that line about, it's been a long time since I listened to the album, The Heart to Be a Fist, The Mad Men Taught My Heart to Be a Fist, is for me like a reference to punk culture and as a reference to my older brothers and to sort of punk culture, which in a lot of punk culture, there's, you know, there has been this saying that has gone around since I had kind of been going to punk houses and commune houses, which is your heart is the size of a fist. Keep loving, keep fighting. And so it's kind of coming from that world.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Or your heart is a muscle that your heart is a muscle the size of a fist. Keep loving, keep fighting.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So,
well,
maybe
if when I put this together, I might just play this right now so people can hear it so they know
sure.
what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And if I may, and I'm going to say that it doesn't surprise me that there's something that poignant behind this song, because when everybody hears it, you'll know why. What I like is you know how it opens, and then you go into this later in the song, you go into this incredible jubilant movement, right? Could I tell you all the things that time has let forget? People will hear it when they hear it, and you'll see what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's got these two dimensions.
But I shall not hold the feeling dear. For I am understanding time. Yes, I am. A memory made and this cup will brew and heal. For I am understanding time. I am understanding time. Thank you.
Let's see what else, because we could talk forever. Now, Whistleblower, which you dedicated to, and I know this fellow, actually, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, one of the great NSA whistleblowers. At least somewhere I read that you dedicated it to him. It could be another false information that I got from some unreliable source. But let's talk about that. That's fascinating. And the rhythms that you put in this thing. Also, there's really interesting chorus or choral stuff that you did. So the words just starting out, hey, whistleblower, got the world on your shoulders. Got the weight of the world on your shoulders. Secrets, we're all getting older. Hold it, accidental soldier. What was in your mind putting this one together lyrically?
Whistleblower came out after I was really lucky to be at this conference, just to be hired at a small conference that I won't make the name because it's a closed conference, but it was an incredible conference where there's this man who basically brings together about 25 people who are very high up in sort of internet and communication culture worldwide. And he's this older scientist, and he brings them together once a year to sort of talk about what's happening and what are we going to talk about in this conference? What do we need to talk about? So it was at that conference at that time, there was a man that was making a documentary about Bill Binney, who was the whistleblower kind of before Edward Snowden, and I say whistleblower. And, you know, there were other pretty high up. There was a person that was working for Chelsea Manning at the time that was communicating with Chelsea Manning while they were imprisoned, and worked for a group called Fight for the Future, which is dealing with like communication and the speech. And they're from Cox, the internet provider, and people that were really high up in Google and internet culture. So I got to meet the law. And again, none of that was sort of making business connections, but just sort of talking about like, what are the ethical issues that we can foresee coming up, and what are ways that we can sort of talk to each other and talk about how we can ethically work as the architects of this ever progressing technology. So Whistleblower came after sort of having a long conversation with this documentarian who's making a film about Bill Binney, and just sort of, you know, thinking about the secrets that, you know, surveillance that we don't know about is hiding, and yeah, lots of other things. But that was the main impetus for that piece. And say like a lot of the pieces on this Monocle album are sort of dealing with this idea of like the internal becoming external. So there's some songs that are very personal that are then creating these large kind of external spaces. So, and then there's this kind of idea of like vulnerability versus bureaucracy that I find quite interesting. And so I think thematically it was sort of trying to walk this tightrope or explore these transformations between vulnerability and internalness and bureaucracy and what that creates, those layers that it creates. So it was a song sort of created by that.
Great that you got invited to participate in something like that. That must have been really eye-opening.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was just a fly on the wall. It was kind of by chance that I was invited. The man that organizes it is a really fascinating man, and he had an idea that he wanted there to be live music. So I was there with a pianist, and he had this idea. He wanted there to be live music that was played every hour and a half, and we would play for about 10 minutes. And his whole idea was that live music would kind of clear the brain of like intentionally focusing and listening to live music. So I don't even think he like cared that much about what kind of music. He just was sort of like, I will have live music every hour and a half to kind of clear the brain, have it cleared, you know. So it wasn't from my own personal like, oh, I'm very internet savvy or technology savvy at all. I was sort of very happily by happenstance sort of got to be a fly on the wall and listen to these sessions and these conversations that were being had.
Great. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
That was a mysterious song to me. Now I get it.
Hey,
Arcade Lights. Very, almost nursery rhyme in its simplicity, melodically. Beautiful, like everything on this album. Inscrutable, at least for me. anything that you have to say about that, about the lyrics in this? Very interesting.
Gosh, see, you have looked at the lyrics way more often.
Oh, this is unfair. Unfair. Starts out three little birds.
I think of it as like, it's a, you know, it's sort of a children's story or an allegory that's about not putting people on pedestals or,
oh.
I think there was a period in sort of like artistic growth where it's like, I respect this person so much and I want to be this person, or I want to try to become this artist, or I want to become this artist. And then there's a period in your life where you realize like, I can't actually be anyone other than myself. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think there comes a time where you have to be like, no more gods. There's no more gods. There's no more people on pedestals that I'm trying to become. And so I think this song a little bit is sort of thinking about like giving the sort of childhood allegory about these three little birdies.
On the tree.
This kind of wrathful, arrogant god that is, you know, even when these just simpleton birdies are trying to save an angel from falling, the god still strikes them down because they're disobeying his words. But I don't know. It's all in there. I don't know. It's whatever you see.
No, I get it. I get it.
Three little birdies sat on a tree, and the heaven, glory be. Thunder, lightning struck below. They all wondered who'd be the first to go. Two little angels sat up on high, watching them birdies, watching them about to die. One angel said, sister, will you forgive me if I should fall, if I should fall to save those birdies three? One mighty God sat up above, watching those angels, watching them fall for love. And God, would he save them? No, not he. He struck down his angels for saving those birdies three. When I'm gone.
Somewhere, I can't find the song. The one where you're talking about our city can't get a break. Which song is that?
I think it's Big City Can't. That's Look.
Oh, Look. Okay, that's another. And for everybody, we're gonna play some of these, maybe segments of some of them, so you get a sense of the melodies. These are just beautiful melodies.
Thank you.
And the fact that it's one artist doing all the instrumentation, and the fact that the arrangements are so interesting and the harmonies are so interesting, I mean, all that's there, and the poetry is so interesting. But the melodies, that's why I liken this to opera, because, you know, there's so much going on in opera, but ultimately it's those melodies that you just love them, you know?
Yeah, thank you.
So I imagine Look is about, it's got to be about New Orleans, right?
Yeah. I sometimes say this is my... Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? This is my version of do you know what it means to miss New Orleans a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's again kind of dealing with bureaucracy and thinking about the people that actually live here and make New Orleans, New Orleans, and don't just use it as a playground. It's, you know, New Orleans is like a beautifully wonderful and vibrant place, and also has rampant disparity in wealth and pretty corrupt political system.
Epic.
And
epic.
Also environmentally, there's a lot of things that are endangering New Orleans, and those things are mostly human made. So I think Look was really about, for me, really looking at New Orleans. And I think what the first line is, she got a mouthful of cellophane, he got lips made of fishing lines. It's kind of addressing all of the pollution and the disappearing of the Gulf South, the pollution that has sort of come into the everyday mechanisms of New Orleans and Louisiana, Southeast Louisiana at large, of having this really tragic dichotomy of being run by the oil industry and also being supported by the oil industry. So, you know, unfortunately, the oil industry is destroying a lot of the Southeast Louisiana a lot of the way, the old ways of life, of how people have been able to operate here. So, but it's also, it, you know, it employs a lot of people in Southeast Louisiana. So that's what this song kind of came from.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Again, looking at the bureaucracy of the leadership taking care of like big money rather than individuals, people who actually live in the city and make the city what it is.
Yeah, it makes even more sense to hear you describe it. Great line here. She twisted like a government, clean, sterile sentences washed down with a peppermint. That's probably the best summary of government that I've ever heard. And then, you know, there's these choruses, you call it a chorus or choir or no, a chorus.
Yeah, a chorus.
Organize a mass depression, progress made, a fast impression, pressure drops and power wanes, alternate the current chains, and there's more, so everybody should. And is that this course is very applicable right this minute, and the track on the album is Look, Look.
It's all static and dream. Big city life can burn a small town boy, but sleep won't come. So dream no more of what tomorrow brings. If the pin drops out, pin you down if you try to fight. What a beautiful sight. All these people trying to live their life. Big city can't win.
It will beat you down.
No, my city can't win.
It will hold you close while it drowns its original sin.
We've seen this before. Wrecking ball that's laced with good intent. Fight or flight. Pave the way for the new 1%. So it's up, up, up. Step right up, adjust your mind, the gap. Like the logic of three. Every step can be a left, right track. Big city can't win.
It will beat you down. Are
you
unlock humanity?
No, my city can't win.
It will light you up. Run as fast as the
wind. Oh, big city can't win.
It will beat you down.
No, my city can't win. Big city can't win.
August makes a fast impression. Pressure drops and power wanes. Alternate the current chains. Dynasty defines disaster. Demigods defy their master. Downplay justice. Court adjourned. Empathetic ground I turned. Choose the day. A phoenix rising. Hunting season. Things the tides. Right the wrong way. The past. Mask able to look in glass. Fabricate emergency. Time will tell yourself to see. Time will tell yourself to see. Time will tell yourself to see. Time will tell time. 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 Will tell yourself to see. Look, you got mouth full of cellophane. Look, look, you got lips made of fishing line. Shoot, shoot, you get the from a silhouette. Shot, shot, you bleeding from a paper cut.
For people that want to follow Aurora and what she's up to, which is not always easy, She doesn't only likes to publish the big things, but you can still get on her mailing list. So if you go to Aurora Nealon, and I'll have that link there, at the bottom left-hand list, bottom left-hand side of the website, it says contact, and there's booking info, and then there's a button that says mailing list sign up. So you can sign up for her email list, which I strongly encourage if you've interested in what you've heard. And then you have a Facebook page. Is that active? You do anything with that?
Yeah, it's active-ish. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So
I'll
if you're if you're a Facebook person, that's definitely a way to engage as well. That might be, you might get more information from the Facebook page than the email list, but it's good to be on Aurora's email list. I strongly encourage it.
Yeah, thank you.
Now to get this music, if you're a digital music person, which I am not. I still like physical media, but I know a lot of people are digital music people. You can go to, I'll put the link below, but I believe it's auroranealand.bandcamp.com. And everybody that knows what Bandcamp is knows all about that. So the album that we've been talking about on this call, plus her other stuff, is all available through Bandcamp. And if you like trad jazz stuff, you're going to love the Royal Roses. You're going to just love that group. Now, there's another way to get physical stuff, which is through the Louisiana Music Factory. And that's a great institution in New Orleans, a record store.
Yeah.
And they have a website that's very well organized. And if you go to the Louisiana Music Factory and search around using Aurora Nealon as the search term, you're certain to find physical artifacts.
Yeah.
Right? So that's
yeah. And that's a great way to
really
support Louisiana Music Factory also. They're a great local business who has done a lot for all the local artists here. So it's always nice to send them business.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I always encourage people when they're at live events and the musicians are selling CDs, you know, if you have the money, buy the CD, right? It's not that much.
Yeah.
And then you can keep learning their music, and then they don't have to, that's one less CD they have to carry home.
Yeah.
And right. And
that's important.
But it really is. And it's a big deal, by the way. It's a big deal to buy CDs. And I also encourage people, like, it's Christmas. We're recording this before Christmas, so you're probably going to hear this after Christmas. But Christmas comes around every year. There are birthday parties. There are all kinds of gift-giving opportunities, and I really think music is a great, great gift to give. And it sort of serves multiple purposes. Number one, your friend will be delighted to get great music, and number two, you're supporting music. And the making and selling of CDs is a important line of income for a lot of musicians. So buying CDs is always a good thing. And then buying them through the Louisiana Music Factory is great. If you don't know the Louisiana Music Factory, wow, you'll be amazed. And
yeah.
You know, we all underestimate how much New Orleans has contributed to American music. And once you start, you know, it's that onion thing again, once you start pulling the layers back, you'll just discover more and more and more music. And fortunately for all of us, Louisiana Music Festival has got everything. Deep as you can go, they can go with you.
Yeah.
Well, Aurora, thank you so much. This has been something I've been wanting to do for a long, long time, and we've done it. And wish you well. And if there's anything
you want, thank you so much, Ken.
Welcome.
Thank you for all your support and enthusiasm. It's so great to have folks that are genuinely invested and curious and active listeners. You know, the making music is only half of what happens when you make music, so it's really important to have the active listener on the other end.
Well, we have great fans of Jazz on the Tube. They love the music, and they're also really curious about the history, and more and more I'm introducing stuff about the theory, you know, so that we can all end what a sixth and a fifth is, and what a 1/5, or, you know, it's not that hard, you know, and it's good to have filed away back there. I always say, like, if you're going out to eat and you know, well, who grew the tomatoes and who grew the okra and whose grandmother showed who how to cook them and how did they do it? When you know all that, the food is even better, you know?
Right. Yes, so, that is true.
Yeah, so that's what our podcast series is about, is to try to get into what's going on in the kitchen, basically.
That's good.
So, yeah. So great, Aurora. And I have an address for you. I imagine it has not changed, right?
It has not,
the physical?
No.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And and then I'm going to remind you about some names that you're going to send me.
Yes.
I might remind you in a couple of days. And then
– okay.
Then we'll send you a bunch of stuff. Well, Aurora Nealon, thank you very much. Everybody go to Aurora Nealon. That's A-U-R-O-R-A.
O-R-A.
NEALAND.com. That's the website, and that's how you can access her mailing list, the Facebook group, all at the bottom. You can listen to some of her music. You can go to Bandcamp, and if you're a digital person, get the music there. Or you can go to New Orleans Music, Louisiana Music Factory, and get the physical stuff. So this is Ken McCarthy saying goodbye to everybody, and I'll catch you next time.
Thank you, Ken.
New Orleans, that was a place where the music was natural as the air. The people were ready for it like it was sun and rain. A musicianer, when he played in New Orleans, was home. And the music, when he played it, would go right to where he sent it. The people there were waiting for it. They were wanting it. We'll be right back. how you met Grandpa?
Oh, you want to hear that story? He chased me for about 12 or 13 years. We didn't go out together, but he just had his eye on me.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day. Children's carousel, a chestnut tree, wishing well. Well, I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing
you. He had his eye on me, but he was shy, believe it or not. How he got to me was he used to give driving lessons. And so he gave my mother driving lessons, $1 apiece. And so he worked his way around. Well, doesn't your daughter want to have lessons? Because we had a car, an old Chevy at that time. And so I went out and I kept saying, well, I'm ready to go for my test. He says, I'll tell you when you're ready. You're not ready. So in the meantime, he'd ask me out to a movie. That was styled to a movie. And after the movie, we'd go have some ice cream, take a walk and talk and all that. And he'd be holding my hand and watching me, not the movie. There's the movie up there, right there. Oh, I hated it. I used to say to my girlfriend, that he's the last man on earth. I'd never marry him. And he kept going out. He kept holding my hand. And before you know it, he went overseas. Everybody was sending care packages. It was just, I think you had to send him a care package. Next thing you know, he's writing me letters. Dear Helen and love, Aaron. So, first thing he came back out of the service, he called me up. And is this the phone number? You know, is this your phone number? I said, yes, it is. You reached me. And my mother said, well, you couldn't do any worse. So he asked me out, and I went. And that's where it all started.
Wow.
As I always wanted someone who could stand on his own two feet and take care of himself if he thinks he's going to involve me. So from then on, we start going out together. I don't know.